The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
One of the things that we love in our congregation as a lived reality and as an ideal we're always striving for, both, is diversity and community. Our mission statement, the newest one, as many of you I'm sure have set to memory, literally says, as a vibrant, joyous, caring, inclusive community of diverse people, we create a nurturing space for spiritual growth and learning. It goes on, based on our shared values, we work together courageously and publicly for human rights, economic justice, and environmental salvation. It makes sense that we would be such a people. We who were either raised in the Bay Area and chose to stay, or who chose to move to this part of the world, more likely than not, are people who welcome diversity. Because clearly, there are more homogeneous places in the country than San Francisco. It's possible, too, that some of us chose to be here because our community actually had critical mass in this city. If we're Filipino-American or trans, if we're from a mixed-race family, we find our people more easily here. But I'd hazard a guess, knowing what I know, that we, all of us here, are people also who learn to love and grow. We are familiar, I'm sure, some of you, of that idea of fixed learning versus a fixed versus learning mindset. Do you all know that, right? The learning mindset is the idea that we can change and grow, and the fixed mindset is the mindset that says that kind of what we are is largely unchangeable. So I would not speak Spanish if I were a fixed mindset person. It was by far my worst subject growing up. But luckily, I was raised in a household deeply steeped in the idea of a learning mindset. I think for most of us, that sense of being people of learning mindset includes how we learn about difference. That we want to know about other people's experiences, other people's cultures, other people's foods and celebrations and music, and whether that's through travel, if we're lucky to be able to do that, or right here, digging into what is right in our community. We might not make what we're exposed to in any given week our regular playlist on Spotify, or our Friday night go-to dinner, or learn the language of a culture that wasn't one we were raised in and double down to read original texts, but we expose ourselves to learning and growth. We love it, I think. There's a theory, maybe some of you know it, about how we live, we human beings, in relationship to difference. There are lots, but there's one. It's called the intercultural development continuum idea of how we are in relationship to difference. And it's one that I actually think makes sense for me, so if you don't already know it, I share a little bit of it with you. It believes that we human beings, we go through these predictable stages of our relationship with what we perceive of and experience as difference. And that we deepen, and as we deepen in our understanding and relationship, that we enter into the next phase of what that looks like. You can actually take a test, you can get a coach in the IDI, if you like. A group of us from church got tested a few years back before pandemic. And basically, as I remember it, the framework says that after recognizing, hopefully very young, that difference actually does exist in the world, you're not that sheltered, that people originally see differences as worse, immediately as something to be scary, judged less than their own culture. sometimes often go, at least for a short period of time, into a relationship with difference that says that they actually can see the beauty of the culture that's different and maybe even think it's better than their own for a while. I know we all know people like that, right? They idealize another culture and diminish the value of their own. And then we come to a place where we see that there are similarities well beyond the differences. That we all bleed, hurt, hope, or as singer-songwriter Sting said in his 1985 song, right, in the midst of the Cold War, that Russians love their children too, in case you were wondering. That stage is this gorgeous forward motion into a relationship with difference in our world, and its weakness is that it tends to minimize the differences that are actually there between us and among us. It tends to overlook them in its quest to see what is shared and universal. Most Unitarian Universalists, if you survey us, are in this minimizing stage, it's called, in our relationship to difference. And the next step, you might imagine, or have experienced, or be in the midst of, or have left far behind, and you're on to the next, is the ability to really see the differences. Some less significant, some that matter a lot, that exist in the world across our life into another's. It can show up in small ways. I'm gonna take a break for 1 second. This pulpit was built for a shorter person. I normally prop my sermon up, but it can show up in small ways. So, for instance, I once married a couple, and their biggest recurring argument was how much food to buy when people were coming over. It seemed silly, like, can you just split the difference or something, until you realized when you talked to them that it was cultural. And rooted in things like notions of hospitality, which in some cultures more than others is among the highest of virtues. So in India, a very common expression translated is, the guest is God. Running out of rice in an Indian wedding is the biggest shame a family can imagine, because rice is so cheap, and so not to be generous on this piece of the wedding meal is the height of inhospitality and disregard for the godliness of your guests. So, when one culture says that a superabundance is how you show love and respect and live out the highest virtue, and another says, as was true in this couple, that just enough is the height of propriety, you have got yourself not just a battle about the quantities of bagel and lox that you go and get at the corner store, but differences about what it means to be Moroccan and what it means to be German showing up, waiting to be navigated. The tip of the iceberg of some of what you are going to have to navigate to find a life between you that is understanding of what are irreconcilable differences of value that you have to navigate a way through. How we have conversations is cultural. Which of you, another piece of how cultural differences can show up and differences that are real. So I'm gonna ask you, which of you was raised in a culture where the norm of the conversation was that each person got to take their turn and speak uninterrupted until the next person was ready to speak? Yeah. That's called take a turn. Taking turn style of linguistics? And which of you were raised in families and cultures where people overlapped, called creative overlap? Yeah, right. And when a person who's from a take your turn culture marries a person or is in a close friendship even with a person who comes from this over creative overlapping, where interrupting, or speaking before someone is done is thought to be amplifying and a sign of enthusiasm and that you're listening, does that generally work really well? No. This one person thinks you're being rude, and the other person thinks you're being sort of anal and controlling and not allowing them to be enthusiastically engaged, and you are not there deciding the way you communicate, but cultural norms about what it means to be in relationship and conversation and its work. In this next part of our journey around difference, mere knowledge also about a culture is not actually the only solution, though knowledge is always power. You and I could know a ton about Moroccan history and culture and Islam, and probably none of it would show as much about what we needed to know about our differences as setting up for that brunch or having a conversation with one another's families and bringing to that our attention, putting judgment aside, pulling curiosity front and center with a big question mark of something is going on here. And what is it? This way of being in relationship entails so many other skills. It entails stepping back and seeing the other as other, right? Not saying I see no differences, because differences exist, you have now realized, and letting our eyes see them and not wash over them like that's some generous thing we do, but realizing it's not actually generous to sweep differences under the rug or to treat your norms as the norm and the other's ways as strange, but to wonder. And as we all know, if we've been in those moments where people have actually been open and wondered about something about us that feels non-normative in the way we move through the world because of our background or where we find ourselves at the moment. And as Mari said in her reflection, it's that moment when we feel truly seen and known, when people step in with wonder and openness and curiosity. It's at that point we can really be in relationship to people who are, yes, the same as us, and yet so very different. And that difference can take so many forms, so many layers, the superficial and the much more heartbreakingly different. One of my biggest revelations, I'm married, for those of you who don't know, to a Goan Indian man. One of my biggest revelations over the last decade has been meeting people who make big life decisions based on what their family needs and expects. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? This whole different sense of your identity. Leaving, as a friend I knew did, his love of oceanography behind, and going back to run the family business and live in the family compound, because in his community that was an expectation and he gladly lived into it. And he was and is happy. And seeing how his family lived that was so different from mine in so many ways, and all the blessings that his notion of family and the way they were together, there was never any moment where he had to stand on his own 2 feet. There were 100 feet standing with him. And to really begin to see that his dreams weren't being thwarted and his expression of his divine purpose wasn't being thwarted, that was my vision of life. But that he had this other gorgeous life that gave him purpose and meaning that was just different from mine in so many ways that I didn't see at first. And in each of these steps in our relationship to difference, we get, hopefully, each time a little more nuance, a little more curiosity about all that lays just beyond our knowing, no matter how much we know, right? There's so many more differences among us and layers about what it means to be human and make lives of meaning. To see more and more colors in the rainbow of human life and choices that are the same and vastly different. This is the lens that I hope we are actively leaning into in our spiritual personal lives and journeys with difference, certainly here in this community. I think we are, in our commitment to being citizens in one family, but what it really means, realizing, is all this rolling up of our sleeves with curiosity and care kind of digging our hands into the layers, finding the roots, right, and layers of what there is to understand about one another. And with that understanding, all the appreciation for the wisdom that people bring out of their differences, and to celebrate them, to make it part of who we are, too. And our music in church today feels like an expression of that. It's simple, and it's not so simple, and so it's a perfect example. What a mix we've had. We had the organ to start the day, and the choir sang a piece that was contemporary by a man, by the way, who was born in Texas, now lives in Germany, and in addition to being a songwriter, I read about him, he was also a choral director, and he studied gamelan while at the University of Texas, I think. The layers. And traditional mariachi, born out of the indigenous people of Mexico, confluence and shaped by the Spanish conquistadors, a national treasure, world treasure. And which of these was sacred music? Music that belongs in a church. I hope you have a hard time answering, or an easy time in answering. In the sense that what we've heard today is what, for Mari and millions of others in Mexico and Latin America and around the world, is what it means to celebrate at weddings and funerals, songs of lament and exaltation and expression of a meaning for a search for meaning and truth that resonates in the way, the deepest kinds of ways, with life experience and yearnings and love. And having learned from Mari, having her risk a little bit of sharing some of that, I don't think any of us will ever look at mariachi the same way, even those of us who knew it and loved it and for whom it's a part of our own lives. I think we've all added a little layer to it. We'll never hear the gritos in the same way. Because what is sacred, which is just one realm of difference that we explore, what is sacred is not in a dictionary, and it's not in a history book, and it's never defined. It's in the hearts of the people who gather, the people whose mission and hearts are committed to what diverse community is about, and who make it a spiritual practice to be in it in a particular way. The way we stepped in this morning, it's in how we treat time and learn to, how we will engage in conflict and understand the different schools of how people see conflict needs to be negotiated in our sense of personal space that we learn to respect, and how we understand our sexuality and the role of elders and gender norms in the way children are raised, and so much more. Realizing that we are the same sometimes. And we are different often. And we find ways to seek the wisdom of that adventure. So let the jazz band and the mariachi and the organ play, and the choir sing, and some people dance, and some sit still and quiet in reflection, and the stories among us be told, and risks taken, and the sense of the sacred enlarge. And may we be enlarged too. May our gritos be heard in solidarity, but also a new opportunity for expression. And may we come to know the greater fullness of the rainbow, of all the colors of which we are a part, and delight in the whole of it. So may it be, and let the fun begin.
There's a drink sold at a coffee shop I like called Cascara Fizz, or Cascara Fizz, depending on how Americanized you are. When I first saw this drink, I wondered what it would be. It's a strange name for this non-caffeinated drink at a coffee shop. But since it was late in the day, I tend to be a bit sensitive to caffeine. I decided to try it. What I got was a sparkling, sweet drink with a familiar taste I couldn't place. I've had something like this before, but when and where? It's sweet, it's good, and it kind of tastes like home. A few years ago, just before COVID shut everything down, my parents took me to El Salvador for Christmas and New Year's. I was super excited. I'd get to see the holiday traditions that my parents grew up with and see family that I hadn't seen in a while. The holiday season also happens to be the dry season in El Salvador, so I could enjoy all the fruits growing on trees that the rainy season brought to life. Now, my family happens to have a small coffee farm in the small town that we're from, and this trip was the first time I had seen it in person. The farm itself is not too much bigger than the inside of this sanctuary, with a two-story house at the end that my parents are working on to be a vacation home of some sort. The coffee trees are young and small, but give just enough beans each year for my parents to take home and enjoy with us for a long time. The dry season is when the coffee berries ripen, turning from green to a beautiful red color, ready to be picked, roasted, and ground. So we're at the farm, looking around and admiring the growth of trees when my mom tells me, "You know, Santita, there's something I would do with coffee berries as a kid when they'd ripen." I asked her, "What would you do?" She told me, "Okay, put one in your mouth, chew on it, spit the bean out, and swallow the rest." I gave her a puzzled look, but did as I was told anyway, taking a berry off the branch and biting into it. To my pleasant surprise, out came a bit of sweet syrup, lasting just about a second before it's all gone, and all that's left in my mouth is the skin of the berry, la cáscara, as we say in Spanish. I did this with another berry, and yet another one, until my mom stopped me and said, "Mijita, leave some coffee for the rest of us, please." Being Salvi and growing up in the U.S. can be a bit isolating, especially since a lot of the Latina community in this country tends to center Mexican experiences and culture. But even so, I've been able to find community and pieces of home, even in the most unexpected places. I didn't think I'd find home at a downtown coffee shop for $5, but I'm glad that I did.